Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. In today's episode, we discuss purpose, happiness, apprenticeship, and making choices. In our first segment, Jenny Bloom and I talk about the tradition of learning from a master, like craftspeople traditionally have done. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Jenny.
Hey, Peter.
So this, we just passed Labor Day. I've been wondering why work has been such a theme in podcasts that we've been doing. And obviously.
Obviously, we were like building up to Labor Day.
Building up to Labor Day. And now Labor Day has passed. Mm-hmm. I was just reading the Bhagavad Gita's chapter on karma yoga yesterday. And karma yoga means working without any attachment to the results of what you're working for, so that you're doing the work, but you're not caring about the results, but you're essentially like doing it for the whole, like you're either doing it for someone else or you're doing it for this notion of the universe, like my job is to do my work.
Yep. So, yep. Yeah. I've been working for the universe since day one, I think.
Yeah. And you were saying on the way in this this notion about when you are working on learning something, being yoga is the topic of the day, that you end up in a relationship with a teacher or with the material somehow. And a lot of people, I think, in our day and age end up in relationships with material in a disembodied way, like they read a book or they see something online. Mm-hmm. So they are...
Right, or like read like a ton of articles.
One step away from an actual teacher. But there's something quite profound in working with a teacher. It's almost like the since we're on Labor Day, it's almost like that old guild structure or apprenticeship structure where you learn from a master at the craft something. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And then you become the master.
Right, like a shoemaker.
Yeah.
A cobbler.
A cobbler. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a model that we have sort of forgotten in our day and age. I was telling you a story about my roommate who is now getting to do her job plus half of someone else's job, the person who quit, and how she didn't get to get trained by this person who was doing that job. But somehow she needs to know how to do this new job.
Right.
On top of her current job.
Yeah. I think that's so common. It's, I mean, in the corporate world, it's not unusual for someone to come in and have the task of needing to cut costs. So right. What do? They throw out everyone with institutional knowledge and hire inexperienced people who have to basically make it up.
Right, and who are hungry and who are willing to do whatever it takes.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's a way.
Right, and it's a way. Totally, it's a way. And it may or may not be really a helpful way to build. But I think what's interesting about it is that it forces a person to, like, really step up or step out.
Yeah.
But the model we're talking about is almost, like, completely the opposite.
Completely the opposite.
Completely.
Because in this other model, you're not making it up from scratch. You're learning it from someone who's a master at something. How do you do that thing?
Right.
And... yeah, and it's interesting because in the current way yoga businesses work, like yoga studios, etc., there's this training that we offer. So you get introduced to the thing, and then you do training. Mm-hmm. And then from doing the training, you get this really close connection with the teacher.
Yeah.
And then from that... you grow in these ways that are dramatic. You know, and I think it's pretty consistent that people have a dramatic experience from doing that.
Yeah.
And I certainly had that from my teachers as well. You know, they like affected me in profound ways.
Yeah.
And all of the yoga writings are explicit about, if you want to learn this, even though they're writing about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's what you do. Here's mm-hmm. how this works. Here's what you do. Here's how it's done. Here's what it'll do for you. And you should learn this from a teacher.
Right, right. It's like all the things that we see online today, and like Elephant Journal and stuff like that. Like coaches writing articles, and they're like, this is a bit of wisdom that I'm going to share with you. But if you want that wisdom, come and work with me.
Right.
And I think that yoga teachers are sometimes like really kind of shy about using that same approach, but it's absolutely, it's necessary to learn yoga, to like be learning with a teacher, and not just in class. Like class is really helpful, but we were talking about this before. It's, in my experience, yoga really opens you up to your more vulnerable parts and allow, and more vulnerable feelings and
yeah.
experiences. And then once you're feeling those things, like, what do you do with them?
Right.
You know, like, you could go talk to your psychotherapist.
Right.
Who may or may not understand at all what's going on for you.
Right.
Or has a totally different schema, a different model for understanding it. Or you could go to your yoga teacher, who is a master. Like, and like, I want to underscore, like, not all yoga teachers are really masters of the craft of
right.
yoga.
Right.
And what yoga is in terms of, like, not just a physical practice, like, it's, okay, what would you say yoga is in this context?
You know, that's the assignment I give to all yoga teachers, mm-hmm. trainees,
mm-hmm.
when they say, oh, I love philosophy, but I don't know how to talk about that.
Mm.
When I'm teaching yoga class, for instance, and I say, we'll begin class by saying yoga is, and then fill yeah. in the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
But rather than define yoga,
mm-hmm.
to talk about what you're saying, like mm-hmm. when you do training, when you study, even if you're not doing a training, if you're just working with a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes even when you're just coming to class,
mm-hmm.
you transform. If you're doing it with a dedication,
yeah,
that's what's required, to do something with dedication over a period of time. And if you do that, you have a transformation, and that transformation opens up patterns that aren't serving you to scrutiny. You can see things about yourself, and you also gain insight that then lets you move ahead in ways that are different from the ways that you've been trying in the past. And so both of those things can leave you feeling unsettled or, you know, awkward or confused. And a yoga teacher who understands this
process yeah.
right, can help you through that process.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who just sees yoga in a superficial way, or they haven't done that process themselves,
right?
They're going to have a harder time. They might be able to help you get to step one or step one and a half or
mm-hmm.
step two
mm-hmm.
of your practice,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes that's necessary too.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's what's available and that's what you do. And
right.
as a teacher, if you're a teacher and that's where you are, hopefully along the way you realize, wow, there's more to this and I could go study that.
Right. And just to ground this in sort of the life concepts that we're talking about, like sort of comparatively, like some teachers can really help you to get into your Warrior Two stance, but then some teachers can help you figure out how to leave the job that's killing you
right.
and sucking the life out of you
right.
and how to move through that. Like yoga offers the wisdom.
Right.
of how to move through difficult situations in your life.
Right. Challenges in
mm-hmm.
In all areas.
In all
and,
areas.
You know, perhaps a good example is in our teacher training, we have a lecture, and it's called Teaching to the Right Level. Mm-hmm. And I was recently teaching a training in Finland, and I had that lecture on the schedule, and I don't really prepare for lectures because I've taught this teacher training about 20 times now. So mm-hmm. I know the lectures, I know the material. And so I just showed up to teach the lecture, and I opened the book to the section on teaching and looked for this lecture, and there was no such lecture. There were no notes. Mm-hmm. There were no manual pages about how to teach to the right level, which was a little surprising at first. I mean, I was mm-hmm. like, uh-oh, now what? You know, but then in this, at the same time, it got me to mm-hmm. say this, just like I just said to you, define yoga is what, and then mm-hmm. fill in, and that becomes your class. It was, well, what does it mean to teach to the right level? Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I thought of was, you have to understand what yoga practices are for. What is yoga? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then why do we do these practices? So that when you go then to teach something, you're teaching to the right level, the practice that will give you the transformation that you're trying to make. Mm-hmm. So if someone is not very grounded, mm-hmm. you have a student, they walk in, they seem very scattered, they lost their keys on the way in the door, mm-hmm. and you know, their phone falls out of their hand, and you know, they're off. Mm-hmm. What the student needs is to get grounded.
Yeah.
That's why you teach them Warrior Two.
Right.
Not because Warrior Two is yoga.
Right.
But because this student needs grounding, and a great asana mm-hmm. for grounding is Warrior Two. And it's easier to do asana to ground someone when they're scattered and just walking in off the street than it is to do some of the other practices that might ground you, like, for instance, Abhyanga massage or mm-hmm. some kind of meditation or something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. So you teach to the right level mm-hmm. by understanding what is yoga, mm-hmm. what are all the practices, and what are these practices for? And then you can substitute practices mm-hmm. based on the students in front of you. So if a student can't do Warrior Two, but they still need to be grounded, then what? Mm-hmm. You know? And if you're masterful as a teacher, you can pull an alternative that has the same qualities, the practice that will deliver the same transformative shift in their energy, in their physical body, in their energetic body, in their emotional body. You can work with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's profound. It reminds me of the Kriya practices, and one of the things that's unique about the Ishta lineage is that we really use the Kriyas to work with the body and to bridge the subtle with the gross. Yeah. And I think that doorway that we have really offers a way to work with your emotional body, to work with your subtle body, and to work with your mental body in with much more precision,
right,
than just doing lots of Surya Namaskar A and Warrior Two. Not like that's important too.
Right.
But when you can bridge the two, when you can start to understand the Saham Kriya and how we're drawing inspiration from the cosmos through our crown and then distributing that energy through the lower nadis, through all the nadis and the subtle passages of energy, how that works, how that really works on a physiological level and an energetic level. We start to do practices that like teach students how to do that. We're literally teaching a science of transformation.
Right.
And it, I mean, I can say like when I found Ishta in 2011, as a young 20s New Yorker who wasn't really clear about her life path or what, you know, a philosophy student who's creative, who doesn't like to do things the way that like the structure dictates, like how does that person find her way in the world? And I really, it's been a process.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's so many people who are really like that, who not necessarily those same qualities, but who don't necessarily fit in with that structure that they exist in. Or who,
yeah, well, the nature of our life is this learning, how do you live life?
Yeah, and we need to learn it.
Yeah, we do. We don't just
know it. No one just knows it.
That. I mean, some people seem to have an easier path at something, you know, but it's not at everything. Someone who has an easy path at, say, work will have a challenge somewhere else. And someone who has, like, great situation in terms of relationships, you know, they're undoubtedly going to have some other challenge to deal with. And because we... the nature of life is challenge. The nature of life is drama, you know, and it's coming to a good relationship with the drama that is the learning that we do in life. We learn how to do that. And yoga is a brilliant, holistic way of maintaining balance and finding the transformation that lets you experience life in a more profound way, in a way that lets you navigate the sensory experience that is the stuff of life, and also connect with the truth of who you are, which even scientists, when they do research and they ask people, how do you feel when you've had X experience, they say things like, oneness, or I was bigger than myself, or I felt so expansive. And so we have this other aspect to ourselves that when we can tap it, it shifts the way that we experience the normal part of our life where we're just dealing with our day to day, you know, and it makes our day to day special, you know. When I wrote my book, Yoga for Artists, I collected a lot of quotations from various artists. And it's fascinating to see how many of them talked about just that thing, that making art helped them find this other quality of life, this other sort of dimension of experiencing that was full of wonder and amazement and richness and made it worthwhile. You know, one artist even said, and I think I quoted this in a previous podcast, that the goal of making art for him wasn't to make the art, but to create that state in which art making is inevitable.
Wow.
So it's...
But coming back to this idea of what yoga can teach you, like there's so many personal lessons and itty bitty little things that were challenges for me that in this like 6 years since I discovered Ishta that I've like really, it's not that I wasn't doing tons of personal development before, I really was. I was really deeply interested in cultivating qualities that I didn't see in myself and getting strong in places of weakness and getting supple in places of tightness. But the structure that this school has provided me is very much like I have learned like that you need to work sometimes very hard to like push a stone up a hill.
Yeah.
And then once it gets to that apex, it's going to have its own momentum.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know that. I didn't know how to do that in my life. And I didn't know how, like, I didn't even understand that concept.
Right. Yeah. I mean, our contemporary world is very short on like a philosophical framework for growing up, you know? We don't really focus on how do you become a person of wisdom, you know?
Yeah.
And not, perhaps there never was a widespread version of that. I mean, there were always monasteries and ashrams and churches and things like that. But
to do it in society, like to do it, to be like the tantric part of our school is like, it's not about just going and doing it, doing the study and doing the practice outside of society.
Right.
It's about how do I live in society? How do I live in Bushwick?
Right.
In a place filled with bars, and lots of people doing lots of wild things, right. and me knowing how much I like to be wild. Mm-hmm. And then how do I redirect my energy so that I can build something in my life for real, for myself, that's yeah. authentic.
Yeah.
And that context can be profound in its practicality.
Yeah, absolutely. There's... And also the nature of how we live in the world changes over our life too. You mm-hmm. know, like there's a time when exploring and experimenting is totally the natural thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even necessarily an age-oriented thing. I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes people do that when they're 20. Sometimes people do it when they're in their teens. Sometimes they do it when they're mm-hmm. 35. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a matter of what are we exploring in order to come to a complete understanding of who we are, what's important, how do we find this essence of ourselves. And, you know, there's a tantric, like a sub-path, mm-hmm. right, called the left-hand path, mm-hmm. which was primarily, I think, designed for people who were too pious or too self-righteous, mm-hmm. you know, so that they would be forced to go ahead and do all these taboo things and all these things mm-hmm. that were considered wrong.
Mm-hmm, like eating meat.
To realize mm-hmm. that, hey, there's no thing mm-hmm. that is good or bad, mm-hmm. it's what do you do as you go through that, right? So like mm-hmm. how do you
relate,
make your connection to the whole of what is, and then live mm-hmm. with that clarity, mm-hmm. right?
Right, like how do you go to a club on Saturday night and like be in an environment that's like filled with all of this like raucous behavior and stay with the integrity of yourself?
Yeah.
Or get lost and find yourself again. Yeah. And how quickly can you do that?
And what does that mean? And what did that mm-hmm. get you? And to be conscious about it and not unconscious mm-hmm. about it.
Right, right. Yeah. And that there's nothing compulsive. I think there's so many pieces of life that feel like oh, I need to have that experience. Or like, you know, like I have all these friends who are getting married. And, you know, like there's so many experiences in life. There's right. so many exciting things to happen. And
right.
I think that yoga really, like this practice and the deeper practice of learning with the teacher is about appreciating how you relate to this thing. Like, what is it that you want? Like, what is your relationship that you see? What is your relationship that you don't see?
Yeah.
And then what is like your learning curve?
Right.
And how can you be held in that learning curve?
Yeah.
With integrity.
Yeah. And there are these nuances, you know, mm-hmm. like you said, something that just made me think of the word spontaneity, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can be spontaneous about doing something mm-hmm. and that's maybe different from being impulsive where the mm-hmm. impulse is just a loop,
right?
You know, or you can see things that are amazing or fantastic or and big, you know, mm-hmm. dramatic, like going to a club. You know, mm-hmm. we saw Iggy Dean
right.
A while back and it was mm-hmm. like phenomenal, you
right,
know?
Right.
And you know, and it's like wondrous, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. not just stimulating,
right?
Right. So
right.
there's you
connecting
learn
with that
to
larger...
navigate these nuances to mm-hmm. find the best thing within mm-hmm. all of the stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's again an element of mastery. Like somebody who's no good at making jewelry will just like hammer on a piece of metal,
mm-hmm.
but someone who's brilliant mm-hmm. at it, you know, knows how to work to bring out the mm-hmm. the coolest, most mm-hmm. sublime mm-hmm. piece.
And it takes time and learning.
Study
to get to the point where you can appreciate
yeah.
and see where to hammer.
Yeah. You know, and I said to Wendy the other day,
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to just like learn this from the internet, mm-hmm. it's really hard because mm-hmm. how do you teach yourself something that you don't know how to do?
Right, right. It's just ridiculous. And I think, I mean, it's so prevalent today, like learning online and like reading an article and then trying to do something. And I think that like what's so precious about yoga is that you can totally learn how to do down dog online. That's great. But like
Not necessarily. You may be doing it wrong.
Right.
Your body.
Right. And as teachers, right? Like our understanding of like how the body is positioned and why we're doing these things, like all of that, like what you bring to your students, it's a hand to hand.
And why are you even doing downward dog?
Yeah.
What's it for?
Yeah.
And is it the right thing for you given the energy that you have going on right now and what you would need to balance? Right.
Right.
So yeah, you can learn what a shape looks like. It's upside down V, you know, but that's all you can learn. Right. I hope you're enjoying this edition of Peter's podcast. We'll get back in a minute. I wanted to invite you to become a subscriber. By that, I mean, sign up to download it regularly from wherever you get your podcasts, but also to support Peter's podcast on patreon.com. Patreon is a great funding site that lets me make this podcast without the need for product advertisements, which I think is nicer for both of us. You can subscribe there for any amount you like. There's a link in the show notes at peterspodcast.simplecast.fm or go to patreon.com/peterspodcast. In our next segment, Jenny and I consider the challenges of knowing what to do for work. We touch on the difference between wanting something from the me center versus finding what you love at your essence. We also discuss what you can do based on the nuances of dharma and karma, which is different from fatalism. Hope you enjoy it. Namaste, Jenny.
Namaste, Peter. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be back. I'm missing some aspects of Europe, but I'm also very happy to see all my pals back here.
Yeah.
We started talking a bit about the decision-making process and maybe meditating on it process of how do you decide what to do in life in little ways and big ways. And how sometimes that feels confusing and sometimes it feels downright hard.
Yeah. How do you know what to do?
Right. And it's, you know, it's something that I think a handful of people don't struggle with.
Yeah.
They're like, to me, they always seem like the lucky ones.
Yeah.
You know, and then there were, I always had this situation where there were a lot of things I could do and I didn't know which of them to do. And I also didn't want to do a bunch of those things. And the things I didn't want to do seemed to be the things that were available to do, including teaching yoga. It was pretty funny because I always practiced yoga for my own personal growth and, you know, it resonated with me as a personal practice. But then the arts work that I was doing dried up after the crash of 2008, and I found myself with lots of yoga opportunities and nothing else. So I was just writing and teaching. And now I'm so glad that the universe sort of kicked me in that direction. You know, here we are 7 years later, and it's like, I love teaching all the time, you know, and I don't miss much of the work I was doing before to get by, because it wasn't exactly the work I wanted. It was just what I was doing.
Yeah. It's so funny and interesting how when you're tuned into that life force energy, things happen and then you kind of reckon with them, but then they end up being, they may seem difficult at the time, but like later you're like, oh wow, that was actually really fortunate
that was that
I got to set that up. I was having a talk with a friend of mine who used to be this like professional skateboarder in LA, and he like was like living like this like, you know, celebrity lifestyle.
Just the fact that there is such a thing is so fascinating, right?
It totally is.
When they say you can be anything you want to be, there's even such a thing as a professional skateboarder.
Right, totally. And what's funny is that that started to kind of like dry up for him. And he's a really smart kid. And he was like, I met him
right after he moved back to New York, because he's from here. And he was like, we were doing this like kind of like marketing job together, sales marketing job. And he was like, not sure what to do about his life. And I think I was like, you know, you're smart, you should go back to school. Mm-hmm. And he did. And now he's like a computer programmer. Uh-huh. And now I met with him just like last weekend, and he was like, you know, at that time when I didn't know what to do, when I was not sure if I should go back and reinvest in being like professional skateboarder or do something else, I really didn't know.
Right.
But now that whole industry of professional skateboarding is pretty much done. Like, it's like not at all what it used to be, you know?
Right.
So it's funny. And he's like a kung
fu. I missed the whole thing.
Right. Totally. And you didn't even know. But, like, and he does kung fu. Uh-huh. So that's his connection. Like, he's like, you know, we're yogis. That's his practice.
Yeah.
And so it's funny, like at the time he got kind of kicked out of that work. Like he was not sure, but he made the decision that seemed, you know, he was like, I guess, you know, yeah, I'll try school. And then he has a lot of job opportunity now, whereas like all of his friends who are still in that skateboarding world are kind of calling him being like, what do we do?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, it's over.
Right,
like,
right.
But it's the same. It reminds me of your story.
Right, right.
And it's...
Yeah, and it was funny because I was playing music. That was my original love, right? And the thing I was trying to do for years and years and years. And I was in Helsinki and I wanted to listen to this one artist. I had the CD and I played in yoga class sometimes. And I looked up this artist and it turned out that he had been in a rock band that was pretty successful. And then got really disillusioned with that lifestyle, mm-hmm. and had been doing yoga and just started doing kirtan and working with some of the musicians that he was encountering in his thing, and made this yoga music album, this kirtan album, and then continued to teach yoga after that. So, I mean, it's also interesting to see when someone's doing what you were hoping to do, mm-hmm. and seeing that, oh wait, that didn't satisfy them.
Yeah.
That it's all, it brings us to this sort of truth, this yoga truth, that it's not about what you're doing.
Right.
It's about how are you doing it? You know, mm-hmm. like what are you doing when you're doing it? Mm-hmm. And so the specific thing that you do, you have to figure out what's your thing to do. And part of that is what you desire, mm-hmm. like what attracts you, what excites you. And part of it is, what is the karma of life mm-hmm. giving you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to be a yoga teacher, but it's a perfect thing for me. Mm-hmm. You know,
and you happen to be really good at it.
Well, one of my friends is an astrologer, and yeah. when she did my chart, she said, you're a teacher. And I said, well, I'm not. I'm pretty good at that on the
yeah.
side.
You know, yeah. Like, yeah.
And she goes, well, I don't know. I guess so. You could reinterpret it this other way, but this chart pretty much says you're a teacher. So,
yeah.
So the world is pushing you in directions, having a practice, or, you know, having a yoga practice, since that's what we're mostly mm-hmm. talking about here, mm-hmm. helps you to reconcile those things,
right.
to go inside and feel, well, wait a minute, what is motivating this drive toward this kind of work? Mm-hmm. And then maybe you can get to the essence of it. There is this book,
And you don't fight it.
Yeah, there's this book that must be from, like, 30 years ago, is called Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. Mm. And I'll put the author's name in the show notes, because mm-hmm. I can't remember it right now. But it said, you know, you have to look at what you love in a deep way, like get to the essence of it, and what is it that you love? And then just knowing that the universe isn't going to just hand you exactly what you want. You know, the universe has its own karma going on. Mm-hmm. And you might find that there's something about the essence of what you love that you can do wherever you are. You know, so...
Yeah. Wherever you are in life, wherever you are in
yeah,
the world.
You know, like if your thing is, I want to be a doctor. Why do I want to be a doctor? Well, because I want to save the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are you doing now? And how can you try to save the world from where you are? That's like getting at the essence and then mm-hmm. acting on what who you are mm-hmm. within the circumstances you find yourself, which mm-hmm. is your dharma, your situation.
Right. And you know. And if you find that you want to be a doctor and you discover that the seed of that is really that you love to help people heal, and then you get into doing that,
right?
Then if your karma is to be a doctor, you're going to be totally in line for that.
Right.
And
right.
if your karma is to be, you know, a Reiki master, then you're going to totally have that.
Right, right.
And if it's to be an activist, whatever that way is, it will find you because you're connected with what we were talking about before we started the podcast, your intention.
Right. Yeah. Your intention, it goes mm-hmm. to the essence. Wishing for something mm-hmm. isn't enough. Mm-mm. Right, you have to come into alignment with who you are. You know, your intention is motivated by you, mm-hmm. by your self,
but your true right. self.
Yes, exactly.
Not your thoughts, not your limitations,
right.
not your family,
right.
not who people have told you that you are.
Right,
but a more whole version.
Right, like we just came from meditation class, mm-hmm. and we were talking about these two parts of the mind, the manas that deals with the sensory world, and we've spoken about that in our podcast previously, mm-hmm. and then this inspired part of consciousness that brings new light into your living if you allow yourself to tap into that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the same way with this intention thing. Most of our desire, like I want that, mm-hmm. comes from this self, little s self, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that's very tied up in sort of like one step above survival, you mm-hmm. know, like we deal in our base chakra, if you want to mm-hmm. use yoga to speak, with survival. And then the next center up is likes and dislikes.
Mm-hmm. The me center.
Yeah, the me center. And these things get turned into patterns of like and dislike, and that turns into personality, and that's me. And I want to get more of the stuff I like, mm-hmm. but
it's called Svadhisthana. That's Sanskrit.
Abode of the self, mm-hmm. right? That chakra.
It makes me think of, like, you know, in The Little Mermaid, she had that like tower that was like her special tower, and she had all these like spoils from like ships, like, and she had like forks, like a fork collection. It's like all of those like little things.
Yeah.
That it's almost like our cell phone.
Yeah, yeah. That are me.
Yeah.
That define me.
Right.
Right. So if you're working from I want to do mm-hmm. from that center, mm-hmm. it's just like a collection of your experiences processed through sort of a limited way of looking at who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can do a practice, mm-hmm. like your skateboarder friend mm-hmm. or yoga practice, where you're giving yourself time to connect with the higher aspects of what you are, meaning like you get your reprocessing mind out of the way and you allow for a bigger conscious input, mm-hmm. then that can help you see mm-hmm. what it is that you want to do, see who you really are,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is driving me, what's been driving me all along, what do I really want to do. And it usually expands you beyond just a sense of for me,
mm-hmm.
I want this for me. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you get into, I want to do this mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. us mm-hmm. or for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy put it really nicely mm-hmm. In our, what might be our last podcast, depending on what order things come out in, but where she said,
season.
Yes, mm-hmm. we are born into a community, you mm-hmm. know, so it's like, us, but we're not just independent operators in the universe. Mm-hmm. We are part of a collection of
people,
souls, animals, everything, mm-hmm. and we find our place, and the things that are around us are also there to help us.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't necessarily even see for ourselves, but we are able to see because we allow ourselves that opportunity to look out for myself and what do I need
mm-hmm.
and where do I need to go to get the support in order to then be the presenter of my gift, my right. component in the community.
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like as a society, like, how can we be with each other? How can we actually be with each other as people?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it steers this intention thing that we started mm-hmm. with too. Like mm-hmm. if you're so focused on social media and who's liking you and stuff like that, it can influence your ability to figure out what is it that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're not going to reach a lot of people mm-hmm. doing the thing that feels the most true mm-hmm. to do, mm-hmm. you know, like going off and being by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Or I know people who've done that and then they showed up, you know, years later. Mm-hmm. I've known other people who do it and they document the whole thing.
Like, so they're went totally into the wilderness and just kind of lived in a tiny house in like Montana.
Yeah. Like Walden, you know,
Walden,
Thoreau.
Yeah.
But even Thoreau, he used to go to his mom's house for lunch. So, and yet he was getting for himself this sense of being disconnected.
Huh.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but you know, this feeling that everything has to be for a large audience mm-hmm. can also be hard to take, you know, because mm-hmm. sometimes what your role is, what you're trying to do, doesn't reach a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think the more profound it is, maybe the more that's true. I don't know, that it's not always mm-hmm. the case, but mm-hmm. sometimes it's a little bit of this you can't cast pearls before swine, mm-hmm. not because it's a dumb idea, but because they won't get it anyway, right? So no one knows it's pearls, so
yeah,
there's only a couple of people noticing the pearls. So that's a few people, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're discontented about that, mm-hmm. or your drive is, I must have lots of love from the outside or lots of affirmation from the outside, that can be challenging. And I've faced that personally a lot because I was in the arts. And mm-hmm. so what do you want? You want people to notice what you're doing and think it's really great, mm-hmm. you know? But the flip side of being in the arts was I got to see a lot of people, especially in the visual arts, they're content to do the weirdest stuff, like mm-hmm. off in a corner somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. And you talk about like, I need time, I need mm-hmm. my me time. Mm-hmm. Like drawing little lines in a configuration on a piece of paper that's 8x12 is like really mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
And the thing is that in the community, mm-hmm. the person who does that creates something that the other people in the community look at and they're inspired by. It touches mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. in these nonverbal ways. Mm-hmm. And it makes for the whole community. And right now in our society, we don't value that very, very well mm-hmm. right now.
Right.
So we're a little bit out of balance and we do things like stop funding for the arts and things like that, which to me makes less than no sense, you know?
Yeah.
But I think when we go to do our thing, if we get quiet and we look inside, it could be something that only I get.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
or it could be something that's totally engaged in the community in a way that everybody gets.
Right.
And that aspect of it isn't so much our choice or
right.
being a really good
pick.
Marketer or, you know, following Seth Godin's blog or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's mm-hmm. about your karma.
Yeah.
And who you are and
as a person.
What the situation is that you find yourself and how does that play out?
Yeah.
And many people who have the kind of success that a lot of people strive for have really big challenges. They have trouble in their lives too.
Our minds kind of get really caught on like that picture, the idea, like, oh, it needs to look like this. I want to be a this or I want to be a that.
Right.
But what my yoga practice has allowed me to do is to really like, and my teachers, my mentors, like really helped to see me and to show me like how, like for me to see myself and to be seen on the inside and then to be seen on the outside, to be like, really like, oh, actually the thing that I'm really good at and the thing that like inspires me is working with other people, mm-hmm. you know, but in a way that's connected to myself, where right. it's not like, and finding that link.
Right.
And that's really what often, where I find my motivation.
Right.
Where I find my intention.
Yeah. And then to go back to that, do what you love, the money will follow.
Right.
Notion. Once you know what your intention is, once you know what makes you happy, mm-hmm. then you have to try to figure out how do I do that? How do I make opportunities for myself to do that in the world? And that's where it has to get pulled down into the earth realm, mm-hmm. into the survival center, into the mm-hmm. fire and the mm-hmm. The water and the earth, mm-hmm. so that it becomes a thing.
Yeah.
And some of us are good at that, mm-hmm. you know, we're karmically predisposed to yeah. being able to make things happen that way. And for others, it's not easy at all
no.
to get into that. And you may never be as grounded as someone for whom that's their nature, right? Like, and that's why, again, being in a community is really helpful, mm-hmm. because then the other people who are good at that component mm-hmm. of it, mm-hmm. you collaborate with them
yeah.
in order to make things happen. You do it either by studying with them or mm-hmm. reading or subscribing
or
to something,
you know,
exactly,
like,
or paying them. Mm-hmm. I think that we have come to a place in our independence mm-hmm. experiment in a Western world mm-hmm. that it's showing it doesn't work.
Yeah, you mean like the nuclear family, like
more like the, you know, this idea that everybody should just be independent and make it on their own, and
right.
they can, you can be all you want to be, you can do anything you want to do,
right.
and all this sense of it's about me, mm-hmm. you know. Michael Moore made a movie called Where Should We Invade Next,
uh-huh.
and at the end, mm-hmm. He went to Iceland,
mm-hmm.
where Bjork is from, right?
Yeah,
Iceland.
Yeah.
So, and
she should just be the president.
Yeah, right. She's the spokesperson.
Yeah.
And in Iceland, they had a financial crash in 2008, just like everybody else. And the banks went down, except for the bank that was run by women. And women, Iceland was the first country with a woman president.
Wow.
And women are very prominent in the business world.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michael Moore interviews three women who are corporation executives
mm-hmm.
at the end. And one of them says, "Your culture is all about me, and we are about us." And one of them says, "You couldn't pay me to live in America."
Wow. Wow. Really emotional.
Yeah, it was really dramatic.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, watching the film, I cried like 5 times, and I'd already seen it once.
Yeah.
You know, because you see the potential if people would stop this thing of, it's only about me,
mm-hmm.
I can do it, and anybody can be whatever they want to be
mm-hmm.
if they just worked hard enough.
Right.
You know?
Because it's not true.
It's simply not true.
It's simply
it
not
doesn't
true.
Obey the laws of karma and dharma.
No. And
so,
it's painful because then
yeah.
you think it's your fault.
Right.
And that may just totally not be true.
Exactly.
It just might not be your path. It just might not be the thing for you. But there's another thing that is for you that actually will give you what you thought the other thing was going to give
right.
you.
Right. And that's all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
And you might find what it is that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But as you and anybody else who's ever tried to be a yoga teacher finds out,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard
mm-hmm.
to survive while teaching this thing that everyone who's coming
mm-hmm. yeah.
to you for
yeah.
it loves.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah.
They want it. They
yeah.
want you to be there teaching it.
Yeah.
And yet for you on
mm-hmm.
your side, it's
mm-hmm.
really hard to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Because their value system that the marketplace has
mm-hmm.
going
mm-hmm.
ranks yoga teachers
mm-hmm.
at somewhere down here and ranks financiers somewhere way, way up here.
Yeah, yeah.
And the solution is, well, you can be anything you want to be.
Right.
So what does that mean?
Yeah.
I should go become a financier.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that the answer to this
mm-hmm.
confusion around the market structure thing is what these women from Iceland were saying. Mm-hmm. We need more of a sense of us, that all together we are the community, and the community needs the bankers, and it needs mm-hmm. the executives, and it needs the teachers, and it needs the mothers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like in Italy, they have 6 months off to raise their kid, you know, and yeah. paid for. Yeah. And, you know, Michael Moore's jaw kept dropping mm-hmm. every time he would hear the next thing that wow. somebody was saying. It yeah. was fascinating.
Yeah.
But it's all because there's this sense that we are happier as a people mm-hmm. when we think of ourselves as a community and as people. And unfortunately, I think in America, we have a little bit of that, but much more we have this sense of we are all independent contractors mm-hmm. trying to make it.
Yeah.
And everybody's on their own, and they can make it if they tried harder. Mm-hmm. And to bring it all the way back mm-hmm. to wrap up, when you're choosing what it is that you want to do, when you're going into your inside place, if you feel moved to something, you know, like some people feel moved mm-hmm. to solve hunger, yeah. right? You figure out, how do I make this happen given the world? Because you can wish all you want, it doesn't matter. You can get angry mm-hmm. at the world all mm-hmm. you want, and that doesn't matter. It only hurts you. Yeah. So you have to figure out, what do I do with this now, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes in practical terms, in earth terms, you need to do one thing to pay for your doing the thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
You know? A great composer, Charles Ives, he's like in the repertoire of all the orchestras in the world mm-hmm. as a great American composer. He made a living as an insurance executive because mm-hmm. he said, I don't want to have to try to survive right. on my dissonant music, you know?
Yeah.
So we have to figure out, how is it? Sometimes you do it by, you say, well, I'm just not going to have a lot of stuff in the world because mm-hmm. I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. But that way I get to do what I really feel is my role yeah. in the world.
I'm really trying to get towards that position because I really like stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. Okay. So it's been wonderful talking
with
you.
Good to talk to you.
Lovely to be back in New York City with you. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk again.
Sounds good.
Thank Namaste.
You. Namaste.
That's our episode for today. Hope you enjoyed it. There are show notes at peterspodcast.simplecast.fm. And if you like this podcast, please support it at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/peterspodcast. Thanks for listening.